we are going to talk movies with Mike Mayo. And not just what's out on DVD and pay-per-view today, but a couple of other interesting topics as well. And Mike, good morning. Welcome back to the program.
Good morning, guys. It's good to be back. We finally got a nice kind of cool morning here for a while before the hot weather comes back to us. So I've got all the windows open in the house, and I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah, it was awfully nice up here yesterday. I think we've got one or two more days of decent weather until it gets hot and humid again. But, I mean, that's, you know, summer in the South.
That's right. We can't complain.
Yeah, so let's talk about this list from Paste. And they put together the top 100 horror movies ever, they say. You have written a book on horror movies, so we figure you know a lot more about this stuff than anybody else we know. Are you surprised that in the top 10 is An American Werewolf in London?
You know, actually, I'm not, because that's one that I really like a lot, too. And it has grown on me with repeated viewings. It's got a lot of the things that I really like in a horror movie, you know, well-chosen humor and stuff, and there are still moments in that despite all the advances in special effects, that really managed to shock you. It's all done with practical effects, not CGI, and that works for me. I like that movie. I'm not so crazy about some of their other choices, but part of the reason you do a list like this, and I've done my share of them,
sure,
too, is to have something very controversial on it, to kind of make people think, oh, no, that's silly, or I hadn't thought about that. And sometimes that is taken to absolutely ridiculous extremes. A few weeks ago in the New York Times, they had the greatest movies of the 21st century so far, and it was chosen by the New York Times film critics, and it was things from, you know, Lithuania that only they have seen but were profoundly moved by, and had all kinds of, you know, really curious stuff on it like that. And again, that's what they're supposed to do. They're supposed to be, you know, these la-la New York Times critics, and so they get away with that. When I did my list, when I did the first edition of the book Horror Show, which was back in 1998, I came up with a list of 13, and I just for you know, want of a better way to do it, I listed them in alphabetical order. And my list is very different in that I included things that might be called suspense films. Silence of the Lambs. I think Silence of the Lambs is a horror show. It means to scare you, and it does very, very well. The list from Pace also has on it the John Carpenter remake of The Thing. Okay, that's kind of an interesting movie, but it is a remake. And how do you have a list of top 10 horror films and put that above Halloween? You know, arguably, after Psycho, the most influential horror film of the past however many years it's been. I mean, that really kind of created the whole slasher genre. And everything that's come since then owes it a debt in one way or another.
Yeah, I noticed two things that your list and Paste have in common are Alien and Psycho.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, Alien is science fiction, but is it, I mean, is as good a combination of sci-fi and horror as you'll get?
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's so hard to make precise definitions. I would argue, and have, that Alien is indeed a horror movie. The sequel that James Cameron did, Aliens, is not a horror movie. That is an action movie. And more sci-fi action than sci-fi horror. And I think in the way Alien is constructed, it is meaning to scare you. It is ratcheting up suspense, and does it just so beautifully that the sci-fi setting really doesn't matter, because you believe that. You buy that you are inside this spaceship with these guys, and that this creature is out there. And it is so horrible, you just cannot stand the thought of it touching you and drooling on you and all the terrible things that we've seen it do already. You know, by the end of that movie, you are just, I mean, I can remember, it's a cliche to say that I was on the edge of my seat, but I was just kind of curled up, and every muscle in my body was tense, you know, waiting for the end of this movie. And that is something that very few movies have done to me, and I think Alien probably did it as good as any Halloween coming a close second. They both movies that really scared me deeply and made me remember them, and they show up in my dreams now.
And let me ask you this, because number one on their list, and not on yours, is The Exorcist. And Mary, you saw this again recently after I've seen it a long time. What was your new thought on Exorcist?
Well, it would have been on my top 10 list until I saw it about 6 months ago with my kids, and it just didn't hold up.
Really?
Yeah, I just didn't think it was as scary, and my kids certainly weren't impressed. I guess they've...
They want to see a Saw movie or something.
Well, no, you know, one that we have really enjoyed that is near the top of our list for all of us is The Babadook.
Ah, good movie.
Yeah?
Terrific movie.
Okay.
One that does so many things right in that. And again, it's the same kind of thing. The setting in that movie, to me, is so believable. I bought that household, the mom and her son and all of their problems, and that's what made the horror of it work. To me, with The Exorcist, what I've always really liked and the most effective parts to me are the hospital scenes and the whole relationship between the priest and his dying mother. The reality of those kind of makes me accept all the craziness that goes on in the last, you know, third of the movie or so, when it moves into that house and that bedroom. When you get into the crazy stuff, the girl, you know, the famous spider scene and all that, it just doesn't work. I mean, I know I'm seeing special effects. And yes, it's a great gross-out movie, but I've never been particularly scared by it. And then you get into all the sequels, and we won't even talk about those, because they're just, you know, incredibly bad, most of them.
Now, let's talk about the story from the Wall Street Journal, noting that Americans may be losing interest in some big franchises. They know Transformers did not do well here. But really, it made a ton of money overseas, especially over $100 million in China. Pirates of the Caribbean, Fast and Furious, worst performers here of those franchises, but cleaned up overseas. Even The Mummy, which has done virtually nothing in this country, has made a mint overseas. And while, you know, movies now are made not just for this country, but for the world market, still the most profitable tickets are here in this country. It's where you make the most per ticket. So do you think that Hollywood is going to continue with this and just sort of this blunderbuss approach, and let's make sure we can sell it throughout the world, or are they going to try to bring back American audiences?
I think they're going to have to continue to aim at the international audience. And what this, the real eye-opener of several in this article was the fact that in the Chinese market, there are two factors that I was not aware of. One, the Chinese take a very large percentage of the ticket prices, where in America they get 60%, I believe. I don't have the article right in front of me. In China, it's like 20%. And also, China strictly limits the number of American films that can be imported every year to something like 34. So they are got to be working, you know, aiming for that, trying to be one of those 34, and you can bet that they are, you know, working, trying to deal with the Chinese now to change the ratio that they get in terms of the amount of money per ticket and just the whole way they do business there. They also talked in that piece about the difference in marketing costs in China, which are much lower than they are here, because the Chinese just don't allow them to have that much media of different kinds to promote their films. And so it's very much a different market for them. But I think that it's something that's so new, they're learning from it. And another thing that the article pointed out was to the Chinese and other Asian markets, Johnny Depp is relatively new. So is Tom Cruise. They are not quite the old guys that they are here in America. They're more the new kids, but their power, I think, is fading that way. I don't see them continuing to be able to do that much longer there. In the same way, they're not doing it here.
You know, you talk about the studios here trying to maybe wring more money per ticket out of China, but do they really have any leverage? I mean, if they try to withhold a movie, all it's going to do is end up being pirated and just sold on DVDs on the street.
Oh, of course. What I think they'll be doing is trying to, you know, they're doing more deals with China to make parts of the movies there, and with all of these that I believe that we talked about there, they're kind of international productions. I know Fast and Furious, was made partly in all these different countries, and I think that assures them of a place in that market in a way that they wouldn't have if they'd done the whole thing in either America or Europe or anything like that. And I'm sure that factors into their decision-making in these big movies. And that's why part of the reason that the big movies aren't as good, because they're packages. They're not told because somebody really wanted to tell this story. In the same way that the horror movies we've been talking about were made, because somebody really wanted to tell the story of Alien or The Exorcist or Halloween. That's why those are such great movies that we remember now. Who is going to remember the Tom Cruise Mummy, a year from now, 2 years from now? Mm-hmm. More than that, it's just not going to happen.
Outside of Tom Cruise, probably not much of anyone. Let's talk about what we've got coming out on DVD and pay-per-view today. And first up is a World War II drama, The Exception.
Yeah, this is a nice little movie, and it's funny. It showed up in theaters in Richmond last Friday. It's already on iTunes and I think on some pay-per-view systems, too. This is kind of a King's Speech sort of movie. It's set during World War II in occupied Holland, and our hero is a German officer played by Jai Courtney, who is sent to kind of be to lead the guard that is guarding the Kaiser, who is in exile. Hitler kicked him out, and he's played by Christopher Plummer, and who's really good in this and might score a Best Supporting Actor nomination for it. He's so good in this. And at the same time, they suspect that there is a spy within the Kaiser's household, and she's played by Lily James. It's kind of similar in some ways to the Tom Cruise movie, the Brad Pitt movie that was out last year, Allied, a much better movie. It's rated R, it's kind of sexy too, but in that sort of masterpiece theater way. And I just really like this one a lot. I think it's a lot of fun. It's something for grown-ups, and if you're kind of fed up with all of the crazy superhero stuff that's in the theaters now, take a look at this one. It's really a lot of fun. Not meant for kids, but for grown-ups, a very nice movie.
Now, a phrase I don't think we're going to hear you use talking about the next movie, Power Rangers, is Oscar nomination, but let's get a clip first.
Where's my crystal?
You can tell me now, Blue, or you can tell me after I kill all your friends.
Let's start with that.
Oh!
He dies
in 3, 2. Okay.
You know, I got to tell you, I'm not sure if Mike, that sounded like Oscar material there, possibly.
Yeah, Elizabeth Banks, I believe is you who we were hearing there playing the villain Rita Repulsa, who is out to destroy the world, and of course her nemesis, and this goes back to the ages, is played by name is Zordon, and he's played by Bryan Cranston, and they're the only two actors that I recognized in this, and they both have just a dandy time, as you could tell. They're just they understand exactly what this material is and don't give it one more ounce of seriousness than it needs to have. Now, I have to admit, I kind of knew that there were Power Rangers, and aren't they toys, too?
Yes.
And there were a TV series,
right,
that was really silly, but I never saw it, so I really didn't understand any of it before I saw this movie. But anyway, we got these five teenagers who are then transformed into color-coded Power Rangers. They are red, pink, yellow, black and blue, and they're teenagers who have messed up in some way, but now they get to redeem themselves by saving the world in all kinds of Transformers sort of special effects. It is absolutely as silly as it can be, unless you are a huge fan of this kind of movie. I don't recommend it at all, but it is, it does have the goofy humor to it. Again, don't take that as a recommendation, but it's way to kill 2 hours, if nothing else. And I don't, again, that is not a recommendation at all.
You got a couple of 10-year-olds at home or something. This this will keep them occupied for a while.
Right. It's PG-13, and there's the usual stuff that you get in a PG-13, including a lot of special effects violence. It's probably not going to do permanent harm to anyone.
Very good. All right, Mike, thank you very much. We'll talk again next week.
Take care, guys.